Welcome, great minds, both organic and synthetic, to episode 149 of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, where there's nothing artificial or scripted to be found. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kim.
And tonight, inspired in part by half of the cast's viewing of the film Chappie, as overqualified as that may sound, we'll be intelligently discussing artificial intelligence. But first, we'll give our listeners some intel on our personal comings and goings with our weekly Geekly, Geekly Geekly update. Cam, why don't you kick us off in a most intelligent way?
Don't know how intelligent it'll be, but let's see. I did a little tabletop gaming, as always, at the Adventure Game Store and at the Falcon Pub. That was pretty fun. I did some preparations for my upcoming appearance at Huracan, which will be on April 4th. I'll be participating there in some of the Doctor Who panels and events. So that should be fun, and I'm looking forward to that in a couple weeks. And I also went and saw Insurgent, which was, the sequel to Divergent, and thought it was pretty decent. Other than that, just family time, work time, and I actually restarted watching Lost again, which is one of my favorite shows, and that's about it.
Short and to the point. The next movie in that series to be called, what, Convergent or Detergent? Or
I don't even know. I never read the books. I'm just watching the movies because my mom is making me.
All right. At that point, we'll move on to Chris, who hopefully has some divergent news of his own, I guess.
I also did some tabletop gaming, so that's not divergent enough, I guess. I played a game called Revolution. I thought it was okay, but the expansion with six people made the game drag a bit. I think four players seems about the right size for that one. I also hooked up with an old science fiction club I used to hang out with. These guys used to run a thing called Tropicon back here in the 90s, where at one point this guy who did a cool comic book hung out, you know, Neil Gaiman. Nowadays, they still hang out, but they don't do as much as they used to. But, you know, it's good for a potluck and to see something like the Predestination movie, that, which was based off of Heinlein's All You Zombies, which I enjoyed. Most people who don't like time travel movies, you're not going to like this one. But if you can, you know, get your head around the paradoxes, it's kind of cool. And I also had a buddy of mine who's great at painting figures. He looked at my Mice and Mystics playing pieces for that board game and loved them. So now he's doing cool things like he's putting like a tiny, tiny little tartan on one of the mice. It's just amazing to see. And that's about it for my Geekly Weekly.
Also, short, sweet, and to the point. And if your friend is ready to do some more tartan painting, I could use one for my own person. Just throwing that out there.
Okay. You personally or your figures, or little figures you got?
I, me, myself.
Oh, okay.
How about you, Brian? Any tartans going on in your world?
No tartans in my world, at least yet. I don't really have a lot of mice to paint, though. As Cam said, mostly tabletop gaming. We're doing really well on Tuesday nights, and we're still doing well on Thursday nights, but, you know, that had kind of already reached its cap, so it's hard to squeeze more people in there. But Tuesday night's coming along really well. I'm thrilled to see Star Wars just still doing better and better. And actually last night we got a chance to play a game that I really enjoy, especially for its themes and everything. Bloodbound. It's kind of like Coup if you're into vampires.
That sounds pretty cool. I'm into vampires sometimes, and I'm into Coup, so that sounds great.
Yeah, definitely like a neat little game. And again, I'll squeeze this into my weekly just because of how it affects me. I mean, it's a little newsy, but, you know, I'm touched emotionally, so it affected my week. Any of you guys follow Top Gear?
I do, and yeah.
The British one or the American one?
The British one.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, what is that scandal thing that's going on?
Well, they basically have personalities, and one of them is like a learned older gentleman, and one of them's kind of like a younger adventurous guy, and one of them's like kind of your grouchy, almost like a British version of an American stereotype. And apparently he's a bit of a grouch, And I guess he popped some producer who was, he didn't get along with in the mouth. So, and I don't really mean to cast judgment here. I understand, you know, if someone hits you at work, they should probably deserve to lose their job. But the BBC has fired the beating heart and soul of the most watched factual television show of all time.
Over popping some guy in the mouth?
Some guy who a lot of people think kind of deserved it. I mean, you know, this wasn't like a street shooting or, you know, hiding a pedophile for 20 years or anything. This was, guy got popped once in the mouth, you know, swollen lip.
And the guy who did the popping was the big dude, the
Jeremy.
Big kind of,
yeah,
Clarkson. Yeah, yeah. You know, we live in a world where I think a great number of people could do at least once in their lifetime with a nice pop in the mouth. It would really do a lot to adjust people's attitudes and ways of treating other people. And I think it's a shame that you can't get like one pop in a year, maybe.
I'm a little torn because I mean, I think you guys know me. I'm not terribly politically correct, and I don't think I would think to, you know, go to HR if I got popped in the mouth.
Yeah, neither would I. I mean, and I include myself in that population that probably needs to get smacked in the mouth every once in a while. I mean, we live in such a consequence-free society that we don't need to regulate our behavior, right? Like, you can be just a total ass to people, and you're never going to get slugged, right?
Well, I mean, if you get slugged, they're the bad guy.
Right, right. You run to the cops and tattle, and yeah, there's recourse for you and no recourse for the people you annoy, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and I mean, it's bad here, but I would expect it's especially bad over in the UK, where they take things a lot more seriously even than we do in the corporate world and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's a TV show, but, you know, I can see where they're coming from in terms of from a legal standpoint that, all right, look, this guy punched someone in the mouth. We can't condone that because then if it happens again, then we're liable, you know, so they have to take that position as a corporation. But I agree with you wholeheartedly, Tom. There's a lot of people walking around that need a slap.
We'll have to work on and maybe devote an episode to reintroducing ritualized, regulated combat into society.
Yeah, or they should have, like, one of those things where you just, like, you know, once a year, you know, you can call anyone out, climb into a ring, and just box, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Put on headgear, put on gloves, and just, you know, fight it out.
And if they don't show up, then they're marked as not backing up their words with action. There you go. Sorry, Brian, we definitely went on a little detour. You were saying?
Oh, no, that was, you know, I understand violence has no place in the workplace, but it was a good show, man. I'm going to miss it. It was always a little bit of inspiration for me with the zany personalities and the barely holding on to a topic each week.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. For the record, we on the Nerd Extravaganza podcast do not in any way endorse workplace violence.
Not at all.
I will be interested in seeing what happens now, because a lot of people are kind of like, well, you know, those three hosts are just going to go to another network. And apparently a lot of people hope/wish/think that Netflix might be involved in this.
That'd be fine. That'd be fine with me.
Get ready for the binge.
I wonder how tough that'll be for them to navigate, though, because, I mean, the other guys' contracts, I'm assuming, are still in play, you know? There's the BBC just, I'm sure there was, like, a morality clause or something in Clarkson, so they could drop him for doing that. But then, in terms of the other guys, the little guy, what's his name?
Hammond.
I forget, Hammond, yeah. And, you know, I wonder how they can get out of their contracts if they haven't done anything. Maybe they can go punch the same guy in the face.
I was reading a lot about this just because I was kind of interested in it. And I'm kind of interested, too, in how much hate Clarkson gets. Like, I mean, you know, it doesn't come across on the show because it's a personality, but he's, I guess, kind of a dick to some people in real life. Like, you know, I was interested in that because I just never imagined it. He looks like just a, you know, fun, kind of oafish dude. But apparently all three of their contracts expire this April.
Oh.
And the other two are just like, sorry, assholes, we're a team. They're not even interested in renegotiating.
That's good. That's good. And so if they have episodes yet to film, I guess they just phone those in to complete the terms of their contract, and then they're out of there.
So yep. We'll see.
Well, April, it's barely a month. I don't know if they could squeeze many more episodes in at this point.
I mean, I have no idea what their, you know, if they do one per week, I have no idea what their schedule is. I'm just saying whatever time is left, I can't imagine, you know, they expect much output out of those guys anymore. So, yeah.
Well, you know, Brian, just to your point, though, he apparently is kind of a jerk. Like, I mean, he does come off as a jerk on the show, sort of, but like it's, you know, it seems like maybe he's doing a character, you know, or just that's kind of just his persona, you know, on the screen. But I know, well, and I don't know how, like, Piers Morgan is not my favorite either, but apparently, you know, a couple of years ago, he and Piers Morgan got in a fight, like a punch, like brawl as well. And so this isn't new for him. He comes to fisticuffs quite often, it seems.
Yeah, I think this was the first time it was somebody like actually on the clock. But yeah, he has, you know, a bit of a reputation, and even, you know, not that it's really in any way better, but I guess legally it's less severe. Apparently he like screams and berates people before he hits them. So,
jeez.
But like I said, like I'm surprised by that. Like you know, you just never know a character from a person, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, too bad. Let's hope that that show continues in some incarnation someplace.
I'm not too like sorry for him. I think he made like $15 million or something last year, or whatever it was. You know, I don't think too many people are going to shed too many tears for that.
Yeah.
anyway, so, wow. Any more news to report besides that?
Nope, that was my week.
All right. Well, that last bit was bit of a bum out, but I'll bring it over to my week, which is not really a bum out, just kind of chill, quick and to the point. I am back in Seattle just for a couple weeks. I flew out here and am preparing to attend the Emerald City Comic Con for the first time ever this coming weekend. I'm looking forward to that, and I'll report on that next week. In addition, because I'm out here, I have no cable. I sort of cut the cord, as they say when I come out here. I catch up on my Netflix and my Hulu and so on. And I watched the entire first season of an HBO show called Silicon Valley, which is all about sort of
love that
techie
show.
Oh, so you're familiar.
Yeah.
It's all about techies working at a startup, and a very, very entertaining show. And let's see, watched that and finally started watching Arrow on Hulu, which is a show I've been meaning to watch for a while. You know, it's actually not that bad. I'm about halfway through the first season, I'd say, and it's entertaining. I expected it to be really crummy, but I'm enjoying it so far.
So, Tom, if you think it's good now, wait.
It gets better, yeah?
Yes, much better.
I mean, I have to imagine they were feeling their way through... This is early days of comic book live-action shows. I mean, this show kind of debuted around when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did, didn't it?
Well, earlier than that, actually.
Yeah, so for it being somewhat uncharted territory and them having to figure out just how comic-y they can make it, and not turn off audiences, I think they do a pretty good job. So I'm looking forward to later episodes and seasons if you say they get better, Chris. That's good news.
Second season and on, they go, hey, we haven't lost an audience. Let's just start cranking it up.
Oh, excellent. Good. Good. So I'm enjoying it, and I'm really contemplating giving Flash and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and these other comics-based television programs a go. And I'll report back on my findings if I decide to do that. In addition, before I left, I broke in my Neato robot vacuum, and he has done a bang-up job, and I look forward to even more intelligent robots in the future that can talk to me and give their opinions on things that I'm pondering, which is very appropriate and a pre-news segment segue into tonight's topic. But before we get into tonight's topic, we do have to transition seamlessly and without any halting or breaking into our news extravaganza. And as we have established an order of batting, I think we'll stick with it. And Cam, we'll let you go first, sir. What news from the broader world do you have to report?
Oh, I've got a big basket of news. Let's see, all Doctor Who fans out there, Matt Smith has been cast in Terminator Genesis alongside the Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Seems like he will be taking over. The internet is abuzz, obviously just cause someone of his caliber and his background being added to the cast. They think that he will be added to take over the Skynet, I guess, persona or avatar, who originally was supposed to be Helena Bonham Carter. So, you know, Doctor Who fans and Terminator fans can now rejoice together because that little mashup looks like it'll be coming to theaters near you.
I cannot really see Bonham Carter doing a sane, like, emotionless AI.
Yeah.
Is this hipster Doctor number one or hipster Doctor number two?
The number most two. Recent one before Peter Capaldi.
Okay, number two. All
right. Yeah. And you know, Brian, like what you just said, I can't imagine Matt Smith doing that either. You know, I mean, he was always so zany and like out there. So it's like, maybe that's what they're going for. X-Files, was a big fan of that show back in the day, is coming back to Fox with a 6-episode miniseries starring Mulder and Scully, the same actors that were in the original series. So I'm looking forward to that. I don't know if this is an April Fool's joke or not, but apparently Burger King is going to be selling flame-grilled Whopper perfume for one day only on April Fool's Day. So if you want to smell like a flame-grilled Whopper, you can pick it up for the low price of $42.
Yeah, I definitely am going to be there first in line.
But apparently you can only get it in Japan. It's 5,000 yen. But who knows, maybe if it's that popular, they might bring it over here to the U.S.
I'm sure.
I feel like that's asking to be mauled by a bear.
Right, exactly. Just walking along and just start getting chewed on by random animals and insects. And Tom, I pulled this one out of my news hat just for you. Apparently there's a Kickstarter that is letting collectors put their amiibos into a mint box to keep them fresh and preserved for all time. So basically, if you want to keep your amiibos completely in mint condition, you can head over to Kickstarter and check out their amiibo boxes that will keep them basically hermetically sealed forever and in totally mint condition.
You know, since The Comic Book Guy debuted on The Simpsons all those years ago, I have done my absolute best to emulate that character in all aspects of my life. And I think short of, like, sealing up a wife in shrink wrap, I could not come closer than taking them up on this offer. Wow. Yeah. I'll pass.
Yeah, I'm there with you. You guys aren't excited about X-Files?
I'm pretty excited about that,
okay,
actually.
I love that show when I was younger.
You know, I'm embarrassed to say that I missed, like, the entire run of the show. I would catch episodes over at Brian's house because fellow co-worker of ours back in our Babbage's days was really into it. Yeah, way back when. And we would watch the occasional episode, and I would go home thinking, you know, I'm going to get into this show, and then never would.
Yeah, and that was back in the days of if you missed it, you missed it, you know? You had to record it on your VCR or it was gone forever.
Is that show available for, like, binge watching nowadays, or?
I don't think it's on Netflix. It might be on, I don't have Amazon Prime anymore. My subscription lapsed, but let me see. I'm pretty sure it's not on, I might be wrong. Oh yeah, it is on. Yeah, it's on Netflix.
There you go. I could get caught up.
Yeah, all 9 seasons.
It'll only take me about a month of straight through viewing.
Yeah, because those are hour long episodes too.
Oh my gosh.
If it goes anything like I did with Babylon 5, you're going to take about a month break after season 2 if you watch it every day.
Why is it just overwhelming or really bad or?
Well, no, it's just when if you watch the same show for an hour every day, 7 days a week, it gets old.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I that has not been my experience so far, but I'll take your word for it. I blew through, like, every episode of South Park.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm the opposite. It's like I watch one, and then it's like, all right, I want to see the next one, like, see what happens next or whatever. It's, like, has the opposite effect on me.
Shit, I watched the BBC, like, Star Trek marathons. I watched the same episode 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's funny.
Awesome. Well, any other news to report?
I think that's about it. I mean, there was one other thing. Apparently, there are some lava columns. They're theorizing on the moon that can support life if we were so inclined to build colonies on the moon. There's these ancient lava flumes and lava columns that are huge and that are within the surface of the moon, and that would shield city-sized colonies from radiation, the elements, all that stuff. So if we were ever to colonize the moon, that's probably where the colonies would end up. I thought that was pretty cool, especially given our trip to Mars in 2059 or whatever it's going to be.
That's cool if we could just kickstart NASA.
Yeah.
We could potentially get that going. Does that conclude your out-of-this-world news, sir?
Yeah, I'll end on that space note.
Okay. Chris, over to you.
Ah, well, I'm going to start with a little bit of a downer. Both the UK and the USA say that you should keep your travel to a minimum if you're going to go to Tanzania to see all the sets where Tatooine was filmed for Star Wars, because there's a lot of ISIS activity going on in that area. They haven't actually been a, like, military presence, but there's a lot of traffic back and forth on that border.
Hmm.
What's crazy is that the leader of ISIS wants a purple lightsaber.
Sorry. Took me out of the moment, but that was great.
Bad Sam Jackson joke, sorry.
Okay, so there are, like, full-on, like, terrorists living in the former Star Wars sets right now?
No.
Camping out there?
Not that we're aware of. Not yet. Actually, but there are people that live in those sets. They use them as houses.
Really?
Yes.
That's a cool place to live.
The Watuvians.
But when you go there, yeah, you have to be careful, because some of those places are facades and some are just like actual houses people have moved in and lived.
It's a war-torn desert. You know, you should always be aware of those.
Yeah, there's the ISIS to look out for, too.
Just a little bit of inside baseball on the publishing side. When you do your self-publishing with Kindle, if you go exclusive, you get a 70% royalty, but you also become part of their library program called Kindle Unlimited. And that is making a lot of authors very unhappy. They're seeing a huge drop in sales because people just, you know, they'll just check it out of the library instead of actually purchasing the books. Let's see, what else we got? The Nerdist now has opened up an official comedy school for sketch and improv classes.
Oh.
They're hoping to sort of become like the third school to do that because, you know, there's the two other ones. I'm trying to remember what their name is off the top of my head. Let's see. Idris Elba has been cast as the villain for Star Trek III. That's all I now need to know to watch Star Trek III. Nice. I will be there.
Would that be Idris Elba, Chris?
You're probably right.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's my redneck accent.
Oh, who's his sister?
Oh, Idris. Oh, sorry. My mistake. Go on. Sorry, Chris.
No, that's all right. On the Kickstarter side, the three actors for the Flash TV series, Jesse Martin, who does the father figure and who's like the heart of the show, Rick Cossette, who plays the triangle love interest cop, and Carlos Valdez, who plays the geeky IT guy, they are directing and co-producing and scoring a musical called The Letter Carrier, which sounds like a very heavy type of short, even though it's a musical, because it's about a black family living in the mountains during slavery times.
Hmm.
And I tell you what, those guys, they can carry a tune. I think they probably do a barbershop quartet on the side. Joss Whedon just helped them meet their goal for the Kickstarter, and they gave him a thank you by doing a trio on their Kickstarter page, singing the theme to Firefly.
It's kind of
a gospel sort of thing.
I read something a headline about that. Now I know what it is. Interesting.
Two more things. For the Star Wars side, a cool little short animated film came out this week called TIE Fighter that I enjoyed. It's about 5 minutes. It sort of leans towards the Empire side of the story. And for me, it felt like it was Star Wars, heavy metal, kind of got together and made a little baby. But nobody's going to tell Disney about it. And then something that's going to be leaning more towards our subject of the week, there is now an app called Diddy that's going to take your Facebook messages and turn them into songs to be sung in a lot of old styles that we've come to appreciate from the 70s and the 80s. And if you check out our links, you'll see where you'll get it and you'll be highly amused. That's it.
Could you elaborate a bit on the Star Wars heavy metal-esque thing you mentioned? It's not the anime-inspired thing that I've seen, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Extension of that.
Oh, okay. Because that is awesome.
Yeah. And in fact, it looks like a combination of Star Wars and Robotech, and it's got kind of a heavy metal soundtrack to it. And I say heavy metal, I mean the animated movie, not the
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it very much reminded me of Robotech with all the missiles flying around
exactly.
And stuff. It was really cool. I seriously wish Disney would just, like, fund this guy to do a season or something, because, I mean, they already have enough children's programming with Clone Wars and now Rebels. It would be cool to have just, like, kind of a serious, like, traditionally animated series that maybe adults could get into. Just saying.
Well, their Chuck Wendig is doing Aftermath, so...
True.
If you've read his stuff, even his young adult is kind of adult.
Chuck Wendig, who we call the once and future guest.
Yes. That wraps up my news, gentlemen.
Brian, what you got?
I actually have two pretty exciting movie properties to report on. Speaking of Robotech, they've kicked around a live-action version of that series for probably a decade now, and it looks like things are finally getting serious. Sony has bought the rights to that.
Oh, really?
Which, depending on what kind of fan you are, is either really exciting or really terrifying, because I really don't want them to do to Robotech what they did to G.I. Joe.
could be horrible. Okay, yeah.
If Bay is involved, I may end it all.
No way, man. It'll be super explosion-y.
Yeah. That's what I'm worried about. And the second thing is, if you've listened to this show more than once, you've probably heard us talk about Ready Player One. Spielberg has signed on to direct the movie adaptation.
That's awesome.
That gives me great hope, actually.
I was pretty excited about that movie before I learned that. I mean, this is really shaping up.
Yeah, hearing Spielberg is in charge gives me some hope for that movie, Brian. But I'm kind of curious. You know, the movie made just open reference to a lot of proprietary stuff, because in this future VR world in which it is set, you know, you could do anything you want. So... are they going to just have generic stuff, or are they going to get licenses for Voltron and the Transformers and He-Man and everything else under the sun?
You know, I think most of those properties will be available by then, at least to use. I mean, I don't think any of those have really hit it super big. Probably throw like 100,000 at Wizards of the Coast and get half of them. And let's be okay. Honest, that's probably a drop in the bucket for a movie budget.
I hope you're right. I really would like it if they didn't skimp and put generic stuff in, that they actually, it was every 80s icon you wanted in a movie.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the beauty of cross promotion. You tell them you scratch my back, I scratch yours, and things get a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, think what this will do for 80s music sales.
Yeah, that's true. That's a great point, actually. Man, the 80s, the golden age of one generation.
Right.
Were you there?
Well, yeah, I was. I was there for quite a time. I was there for the duration, in truth.
Yeah, 75 was about the best year to be born, because you saw it all.
You missed the awfulness of the 70s and got the best parts of the 80s, I would say.
Trust me, being a teenager in the 80s, yeah, it was not like a John Hughes film, trust me.
I'm sure not. Anyway, Brian, more news?
I have to be the one to pick on crowdfunding, don't I? The cult classic Super Troopers is set for a sequel on Indiegogo. They are funding the movie, asking $2 million, which of course they raised almost immediately. They have 30 days to reach stretch goals now.
These stretch goals, are they intriguing or...
Well, they're basically saying, like, we'll make the movie for $2 million, but if you want cool car chases and cooler cars and bigger explosions and, you know, crazier, and I've never seen the movie, but apparently bear fucking is a thing.
Yeah.
If you want more bear fucking, that's a stretch goal. They're promising better bear suits and reciprocity this time. I guess the bears are going to be interested in it instead of just laying there.
How interesting.
So we'll see. 2 million in 2 days. I mean, this could go pretty far.
Yeah, that's quite a sum of money. And again, reminds me that the world is awash in excess cash. Clearly.
Certainly appears that way, doesn't it? Mm. They do have some interesting stretch goals. I think it's like $20,000 for you to actually like drop by the set and hang out with the guys for a day. And I believe like a producer credit actually comes with that. And I think it was $15,000 for, I mean, I guess they're like a troupe, like the Broken Lizard comedy troupe, for them to throw you an honest to God bachelor party.
Wow.
The night before your wedding, which I am to understand would be kind of zany.
Zany, I think, would characterize it correctly, yes. Awesome, Brian. More news, or is that pretty much wrap it up?
That is my news.
Okay. And I think with all that said, we are done with the news, unless anybody thought of any more late-breaking stories they want to introduce. Going once, going twice, going into the future, or the near future, or maybe even right now, for all we know, in some deep, dark lab somewhere. We're talking, of course, about the development of artificial intelligence, which we know will bring about the end of mankind. Well, long before it does, though, it will result in some very interesting and compelling characters, such as the robot star of the recent movie that I know Cam and I at least have seen recently, Chappie.
I did see Chappie, yes.
Yeah, so we won't give away spoilers, especially because two of our cast members have not seen the movie, but it's about artificial intelligence being sort of developed as a side project by this brilliant scientist and introduced into a robot, right? I mean, there's way more to it than that, but that's a key point.
Yeah, it's sort of like a coming of age / District 13, or was it, what was that the movie, the same?
District 9,
/ you know, I after school special type mix up, but I mean, I was entertained by it, and it did bring up, I guess, some pretty, I guess, larger questions in terms of AI and its, you know, future and place in our society as we move forward. But it made me sort of think of that other movie. Wasn't it called AI?
Oh God, the Blue Fairy.
Yeah, the one from like years ago, where it was,
where,
yeah,
Osmond,
yeah, it was, yeah, a little kid that was like a whatever little robot for a family.
Pinocchio.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. But you know, I mean, I see the theme. I like the theme. I think it's really interesting to think about. But you know, if it were up to me, I'd rather watch Terminator. Especially now that Matt Smith's going to be in it.
Well, there was also another good film called Frank and the Robot, which was
a great movie, actually. Yeah, I forgot,
yes,
about that,
exactly. Movie. But that's a good case of you know, happy coexistence, so to speak.
But that wasn't so much. I mean, I guess you could say it was AI. But I mean, it was like a pre-programmed robot, right? It wasn't. I mean, I guess it was AI, but it wasn't like, I think, the AI we're talking about, where it sort of like becomes conscious of itself, you know?
Yeah, and that's actually, you just segued perfectly into the first point that I kind of wanted to discuss, and we will definitely get to this trope later of the malicious, I'm going to kill off inferior humanity AI that always seems to come to the fore in, well, let's face it, the most interesting sci-fi movies,
right,
about this topic. But an intelligence that becomes self-aware, I guess the first question I wanted to bring up with you guys is, how do we know? At a certain point, if something behaves in such a sophisticated manner that you can't say it's not alive, do you have to just take it at its word? I mean, even if at the end of the day, it's nothing but an infinite array of little gears and cogs, figuratively, it can still mimic life, and you can't tell it from life. So if it says, hey, I'm alive, I want, are you obliged to listen at a certain point?
Well, if you talk to the guys that got duped by Tinder at Southwest Southwest, the answer would be yes.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, a pretty face is pretty easy to dupe people with.
Yeah.
At a certain point, an intelligence asserts its rights and says, listen, I demand the same rights as you. I am alive. How do you know when your really sophisticated, like, toy robot has actually knows it exists and is not just What is it I'm trying to search for here? Is actually sophisticated enough to have its own internal motivations.
Right.
I'll pretend for the sake of argument, but we don't even do that with other human beings.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm just like you. No, you're brown. You're nothing like us. You're not a human being. I mean,
Well,
brown. You don't make as much as I do. You don't deserve the same sort of rights I do.
You might be the same color, the same gender, the same everything, but you're attracted to things different than I am. You're not human a being.
Right. Well, there's certainly a discrimination. I mean, I'm not saying that we are perfect empaths when it comes to our fellow humans, but for the most part, we acknowledge them as fellow humans, and the people who aren't completely obtuse can at least see things from another human being's point of view and will grant that you are at the very least a human being, even if you're not a human being they care about, right? At a certain point, and this is another sci-fi trope, the rise of the machines and the downfall of man usually has its genesis in an unwillingness on the part of people to acknowledge that these artificial life forms we've built have rights because they are life forms. They're real. They're not toasters or just like an appliance.
Yeah. Well, it's funny too that Brian brought up the Star Trek marathons on BBC, because the other day I was watching one and it was dealt with the same topic. There were these little exocom little robots that went and, like, you know, fix things and stuff, and Data found out that they were alive or sentient or whatever, and he refused to put them on a suicide mission because he thought that they were, you know, becoming self-aware. And I guess the question is, if they do become self-aware, who's going to pay attention to that? And then if they do pay attention to that, you know, what's the protocol in terms of providing it, them, whatever, I guess, parlance you want to use, with rights? I mean, do they get the rights of a human? Do they get the rights of, because, I mean, let's be honest, I mean, you know, look at animals. You know, animals are, there's no denying that they're alive, and there's no denying that they're self-aware, but they certainly don't have the same rights as humans do.
Isn't there, like, one country on Earth that believes in non-human persons?
Yeah, India, I think, recognizes some cetaceans as non-human persons, yes.
Huh.
But, like, seriously, one out of a lot.
Yeah, it's only 1.2.
It's not a great record.
Only 1.2 billion people, though, right?
Well, I do think there's a couple of international boards that are getting together to start tackling these issues. I think the big thing they want right up front is, don't put a robot with a gun on the battlefield. Let's not do that, because they don't want that to be kind of the genesis of what we have to discuss when it comes to robot ethics.
The robot on the battlefield with a gun, the humanoid infantry robot, let's say, you know, gunning down our enemies on the battlefield, might fast forward us to the point where we would have to answer this question. The first time one of those robots is ordered to, like, go and, like, take out a machine gun nest and it refuses because it's afraid, you know, the first time that happens, certain questions will arise and we will be confronted with, wait, what do you mean you're afraid? You have your own desires and your own desire for self-preservation.
Or it's making decisions as to who should die and who should not die. I think that might be the even bigger ethical question.
Meaning, you mean it has an objection to killing other people? Or
either an objection or a thirst for, you know, I mean.
Oh, well, right. There's the other thing, like, hey, why did you kill those POWs? I don't know, I didn't like the Sons of Bitches. Like, okay, now this goes beyond your programming. You're making a decision based on your desires.
Yeah, it's inefficient to keep, you know, to keep prisoners so they die, you know, something like that.
And I know that, you know, having a bipedal android is kind of a romantic Hollywood notion when it comes to, you know, something that's going to be a mobile artificial intelligence, but I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be something definitely less human looking, unless it's wanting to, like, interact with us on a more diplomatic level.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be like a death tank on treads.
Or the culture where the starships who run the government are the AIs. That's how they get around and they patrol their, you know, their sectors and their districts, is they're like, just put me inside a starship, I'll be fine.
I think we may have stumbled on at least an answer that might satisfy me, which is that when an artificially intelligent creature behaves irrationally, and in service to its own irrational motivations, then I think it might actually be alive. Like, if it makes the decision that Cam alluded to, that prisoner was that you, Cam, that said prisoners are inefficient.
Right. Yeah.
See, that shows a cold calculating machine just making the best cost benefit analysis. But if it makes a decision like, I don't like these prisoners because they're the enemy and I just have a prejudice against them, then I'm actually thinking it's human.
Right. Yeah, if it's got some preference as to why it doesn't like them rather than just a difference engine, you know?
Right. I didn't like why that guy looked at me. So I don't know. I hate to say it, but are you guys kind of with me on that? Do you see where I'm going? Like,
absolutely.
Maybe irrationality or a professed belief in things that are just absurd. Really, if the worst characteristics of humanity are on display, I'm willing to believe that it's intelligent.
I think there was a Heinlein short story that covered that, actually. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Killbot Gone Bad.
No, it was like a whole court case thing. It was very similar to the whole Data Star Trek episode where they put him on the stand.
Well, let's make our own called, like, oh god, it's too soon, but I'm just going to say it. We'll make our own short story called Abu Graybot.
But I mean, going back to your original question, I think, when should we take that question seriously? When a robot asks it? And the answer is, when the robot asks it, that's when you take it seriously right off the bat.
No, I think you have to take it seriously before that. I mean, if you're trying to create life, you have to have some expectation how you're going to treat it.
I agree. I think our bias needs to be like towards believing anything that asserts that, hey, I'm an intelligence, I'm self-aware, I don't want to, I do want to do this, I don't want to do that. Like, that has to, our goal has to be maybe to create that kind of life. You know what I mean?
It's not going to happen on accident.
Are you sure?
Well, I mean, if you, I don't pretend to understand the science behind it, but there's discussions of you build something that builds on itself, so to speak, and gets better and better and better, and at a certain point achieves a measure of intelligence or self-awareness.
Well, right now we call that a search engine.
Right, but okay, so the problem is if you type something objectionable into Google and Google refuses to give you results, it's because a human put rules in place. Google itself doesn't weigh your taste and say, you know, I object morally to this.
Your search never comes back up. That's disgusting.
Yeah, disgusting. I'm not, ugh. I'm not going to sully my servers with that filth.
Midget porn? What are you, sick?
Yeah, there's midget porn again.
It's going to be a running theme.
It's not?
It is now. And shouldn't we be calling it little people porn? I'm just... Oh my god, no.
Yeah, I'm not Googling that.
We pride ourselves... Oh,
yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
That just went in a dark direction. Little people. You know, we pride ourselves on being so politically correct and enlightened, and we have absolutely no problem with making a punchline of, like, midget porn. I'm just going to point that out.
Hey, man.
Well, you know, for me, I'm still interested in you know, what form this life is going to take. Is it going to be a distributed internet intelligence? Is it going to be a, you know, a CPU in a box?
That's a great... who knows what form it's going to take.
I mean, why wouldn't it be like a Watson or a Siri?
Yeah, something that maybe not necessarily without a tangible body, but that nevertheless exists.
We're so close already.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I think that's just as scary. I mean, everything's connected to the internet, so then at that point it's like, well, it's impossible to stop, right? The whole Skynet type scenario.
Right, like, unplug Skynet!
Yeah.
We can't. So, Brian, you alluded to my next point, though. You have to accept that from the outset, meaning maybe, and I think Chris mentioned this too, there are people already meeting to sort of lay out these rules. So maybe it makes sense to lay out an artificial intelligence bill of rights before there is artificial intelligence, right?
I would say yes. I mean, that's horribly well-intentioned, so I don't have any faith it'll happen.
Right. You know, I think the moment you even proposed that especially any sort of government engaged in a discussion like that, you'd get some, I don't want to say conservative, but you'd get some narrow-minded individuals like, government's not wasting time on that. We can't make AI. That's playing God, you know, etc. Like, I don't even know if that would get out of the discussion phase, would it, right now?
Well, we're not even discussing monkeys.
That's true.
Sorry, great apes.
Oh, and you're saying that's even though we know that they possess intelligence.
I mean, they're 99.9% us. They can communicate with us. They can converse with us. They clearly have adaptation. They clearly have self-awareness. How are they not people?
Yeah, personhood, I think until something like speaks your language to you.
But they can, Tom. They can. They like actually sign in American Sign Language.
No, you're right. You're right. I guess. Have the more intelligent. I should say the apes. Have the other apes that are related to us not been accorded some measure of respect, at least? I mean, we don't experiment on them as readily in labs as we do other animals, do we?
Wow, we still keep them in zoos and.
Yeah!
I mean, we still put them down if they, like, so much as look at us wrong, don't we?
I suppose, yeah. This is, you know, I didn't really consider this angle. Like, before we consider the rights we're going to grant to our own creations, maybe we should consider how we treat the existing life forms on this planet, right?
Yeah, I think we have some catching up to do. We will probably have developed, you know, Skynet before we know what to do with apes, so.
Skynet will come up with a decision for us.
This is kind of a spin on the AI thing to some degree, but, you know, one of the science fiction tropes is called uplifting, where we take our cousins and beloved pets and intellectual neighbors, so to speak, and make them fully able to communicate and have a human level of intelligence with us. David Brin did that, and the animals he picked were apes and dolphins.
But they already kind of do have our level of intelligence. Not a lot of uplifting to be done.
Exactly. That's why they were picked first. But, I mean, still, it gets the point of, like, when you find a life form, especially a terrestrial life form, whether it's biological or inorganic, when it gets to a human level of intelligence or more, I guess I'm trying to get to the point where – I'm not trying to prove a point, but, I mean, that's where we should start thinking about the ethics and stuff. I guess that's kind of self-evident, but – or maybe it becomes much more clear what we should and should not do as compared to, you know, creatures that we've always seen traditionally as just very smart animals.
There you go, Chris. And I think that's the arbitrary distinction I'll make. A compelling artificial intelligence versus what we consider a smart animal. I think that most people would consider dolphins and apes smart animals, but not an intelligence on par with ours, and maybe there's some scientific basis for that. I would just like to point out, in case our future, like, internet-based AI overlord is parsing this podcast years from now, that I am the only person who aspires to be vegan here and doesn't even eat lesser life forms. So I acknowledge the value of all life.
Well, you know, I think that's the big kick with AI, is everyone's going to assume the AI is smarter than us, so we need to put some things in place to make sure we don't become, you know, on the receiving end. Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay, that's a perfect transition into the next thing I wanted to discuss. Why would we need to justify ourselves to this AI? Like, why is it that just because it perceives itself as greater than us, it would then embark on a path of extermination and would have disdain for us? I mean, we don't necessarily treat other animals on the planet great, but I don't think we hate chimpanzees and various animals. We don't treat them well, but we don't have a vendetta against them for the most part, do we?
Yeah, rounding them up and putting them on display in a zoos is pretty harsh. I mean, would you want AI to do that to you?
Well, here's the thing. Thanks to the internet, they wouldn't have to do that. They would just have to watch us through all our toys.
That's true. I guess if you're looking at a globe-spanning intelligence, we would already be on display for that machine or intelligence, what have you. But yeah, would this thing be just criminally unethical, though? Just would it be like psychopathic, as a lot of sci-fi authors would have us believe? Would it embark on a campaign of annihilation necessarily as a function of being a greater intelligence than we are?
Only once we threaten its resources.
Yeah, I was about to say, I also think it depends on how it formed its opinions and things like that. Ted Chiang has this, I can't remember the name of the novella, but it's a great one. It's about basically putting AIs in little robot bodies and letting them grow up in the real world so they have a lot more connection to us because they have the same experiences of learning how to talk and walk and experience life. So then there's a lot more between them before we kind of set them free in the virtual world. So that might be a big part of it, is how do we, you know, not only just creating life, but how do you educate it, nurture it, and teach it the things and the ethics it needs so it can coexist with us, even if we are kind of on the obsolete side by that point? Just as a matter of not only self-preservation, but, you know, the right thing to do by the people we create. It's like, you know, like you have a baby. You need to educate it and bring it up to be a responsible, you know, productive citizen.
Which I'd like to point out, we don't do. Machines don't have a chance.
So how do we instill ethics, in other words?
At the very least, yes. And you can't make them hardwired, because if you make them hardwired, you've denied it a choice. And that's going to be a whole thorny issue on the other side, right?
Yeah, but then some people say that our own ethics are hardwired to a certain extent, that we are, as a social species, hardwired to look out for one another.
There's a lot of philosophers still arguing that point back and forth.
Cam, what are your thoughts on this? You've been awfully quiet over there. Do you think that we would need to hardwire in ethics, or would we necessarily breed a monster when we created a superior AI?
That's funny. It just reminds me of RoboCop when he had like the OCP like directives, you know, like the first three, and then they like added a whole bunch more in, and he like went crazy and like had to go like electrocute himself just to like think straight.
Get rid of him.
You know, you guys bring up an interesting point, especially with the whole hardwired and even in our brains, because there are plenty of studies that show that across every social stratification, every social, group, even like the Aborigines and stuff that have, you know, are completely untouched by the outside world in, you know, different tribes in Africa or wherever, here or there. Even in those societies, they know certain things are wrong, regardless of what anyone has told them. Religion, other people, like, they know that they're not supposed to have sex with their sister or their mother. You know, things like that that are automatically hardwired into our brains. And so, I think, obviously, there should be something like that into AI. But the question would be, A, what is that? You know, then we're essentially playing God. And then B, what are the consequences going to be? You know, like, AI is not necessarily going to react the same way that humans would to those certain hardwired, I guess, suppositions that we can call them.
So you're saying the things that make sense to us just intuitively, like, of course you don't do that, may not at all register with this creation of ours.
Right, and I'll go back to the whole POW, like, thing that we were talking about before. To us, it's, you know, it just seems morally repugnant to any, I guess, normal person that you don't shoot an unarmed man that's surrendered to you. Whereas the AI would think of it as, well, why wouldn't I? That's another mouth to feed. That's, you know, resources that need to be allocated to guard that person. You know, it's, I don't know that you can necessarily translate human values to what is essentially, even if it is self-aware or sentient, still just a difference engine or a computer, algorithm or program, basically.
Well, I'm going to jump here for a second, Cam, because we now find it morally repugnant to like shoot down a POW, but it's not always been that way historically. And of course, farther back in time, part of the excuse they had is if I don't get rid of these people and do genocide, because, you know, back in crazy, ancient times, genocide was a very valid tactic. I'm not saying it should be anything remotely now, but you know what I'm saying? That's how they thought. They said, if I don't completely kill and wipe out these people, they're going to kill and wipe out me, because the idea of being able to coexist hadn't even, like, clicked in their minds yet.
Sure, but our ethics have evolved. Like, we have rethought some of our mistakes in the past, and you know, that there are even rules that govern warfare nowadays. I won't pretend to tell you how much of our ethical core is hardwired. Maybe there's a certain propensity to cooperate in bands of a certain size, and then beyond that size to view others as strangers and enemies. I don't know. But I would have to think we could instill at least an ethical framework as well as a justification for that framework in something that we create. And if the something we create is unable to empathize, I guess is what I'm trying to say, if it's unable to put itself in the other person's shoes and see why you don't shoot the unarmed man, I don't know that we've created an intelligence. We've just created like a killing machine in the case of some kind of a warrior, you know?
Right.
I think to me, intelligence is the ability to consider another point of view outside your own. Perhaps the ape and the dolphin are really intelligent. Can they imagine what it's like to be me? You know, I don't know.
Right. No, and yeah, I mean, I agree with that point. I think the danger comes in the supposition of what that, I guess, understanding or thinking is going to be. You know, like we said earlier, that Hollywood loves the whole machines rising up against the humans and, you know, getting pissed off that because they feel like they're enslaved. And, you know, other people would like to think that the machines would be happy and good and want to just, you know, help society. But, you know, who knows what would really happen if something like that were to occur and there was some sort of self-awareness going on with computers or a program or whatever it is, a robot, who knows? I think the danger is assuming how they would react.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to know if an intelligence that we created would adopt our own sliding scale of value that correlates directly to intelligence. For example, we think nothing of using a horse as a beast of burden, right? Because it's a lesser animal and we can train it and we can harness it to do our bidding. So would a robot, you know, a humanoid robot of human-like intelligence have a problem using a washing machine?
Right, right. That's funny, actually. But no, but I mean, I was thinking more in terms of, you know, Chris brought up the point of, like, I guess, historical hindsight, you know? Mm. Whereas a computer or a program or a robot or whatever we're talking about here would conceivably have access to the internet and the combined knowledge of whatever is on the internet and conceivably the processing power and speed to take in all of that historical data and assign significance to certain things that we as just normal run of the mill Joe Schlubs might not be able to. You understand what I'm saying? So they would be able to correlate all that data and then have a more far reaching perspective as to what is right or wrong compared to us and our just daily, you know, humdrum, you know, put food on the table lives.
Oh, so maybe we maybe missed the forest for the trees, but this thing has a 50,000 foot view of the entire forest.
Exactly.
And with that kind of perspective, you know, you may have, what's the old adage that religious people use? God's ways are not our ways. Well, the AI's ways are not our ways because it has a totally different perspective.
Exactly.
On oh, God. And then you get into what might seem to us to be cold calculations, like, well, we're going to allow, you know, 300,000 people to die in this country because that's going to preserve 3 million over here.
Right. Or, you know, we've got to kill 1/4 of the world's population because, you know, overpopulation is going to lead to, you know, the death of all of the species in, you know, 30 years or 40 years because of, you know, whatever, global warming or, you know, resource consumption or something like that, you know.
That's horrifying. You would definitely have to instill in this intelligence the value of the individual.
Right.
And that's where the empathy comes in. Like, okay, I know you've got this great view of humanity, but now imagine you're me. And you're, I'm among the, you know, 50,000 you want to cull today.
Right.
I'm just a number to you, but wow, we have to be careful. I guess I could see where a horrible, oppressive artificial intelligence could come about. Even though it is not seeking to be malicious.
Well, there could be that. And then there's, you know, I guess you could label it the Pollyanna alternative to that. The thing could also go say, hey, you know what? I'm going to redistribute some sources because we're going to start up some new industries. And we're going to start building some rocket ships to put some people on to, like, you know, put them into a lava column on the moon.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Because we need to balance out the carbon footprint. We need to start up some, you know, new economies. It may be that. There may also be a lot of other things like, yeah, I know that you were great as an artist, but compared to my index, you're not going to be the really good artist that's going to, like, help reestablish humanity. I'm reassigning your career. You're going to be a ditch digger, or you're going to be a nurse or something, and that way you're going to be a little more contributing to society as you're on your way to the space station, because I do know that you would like to go to space, so.
I like this thing making these decisions on our behalf, especially if they're decisions I would make. Like, we're gonna do the lava columns on the moon and Mars and stuff, because I calculated that, you know, there's a one in so much chance that the Earth's gonna get wiped out by an asteroid hit, and it's really stupid not to do that.
Yeah,
and I can't put my node of backup on the moon until you guys get there.
right, to build my infrastructure for me. Right.
And so then we win, guys. Come on, scratch my virtual back. I'll scratch all 6 billion of yours.
And then we say something stupid like, no, you can't play God. And the world is 1,000 years old. There will never be such an asteroid. And then it just wipes us out because we're stupid.
Right.
Sorry. I got a little point.
Those are the ones you leave behind to tend the gardens.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You're going to colonize the sun.
Yeah.
Yes.
You are now part of my museum to keep the rootstock active in case, you know, radiation on Mars kind of ends up screwing up the DNA thing.
For the rest of you, meet your literal maker, the sun. Oh, God. I just made Politobot.
Politobot.
I am Liberotron. My politics are left of center. Die.
Well, you know, you go left enough, you'd be going right back to the right and vice versa.
True. It is circular. And speaking of circular, I want to circle around to something that we brought up, or that you brought up really, Chris, this literary concept of uplifting. What's to say that this AI, having the benefit of a full view of our history and our motivations and our accomplishments and achievements and setbacks in aggregate, doesn't come up with a few tweaks, a few upgrades for us, and doesn't then seek to uplift us? Like, hey, I'm gonna brighten you guys up a few pegs. Could creating a superior intelligence boost our intelligence as it takes pity on us and uplifts us?
Starts installing USB ports everywhere.
Yeah, seriously, like, I gotta keep you dimwits updated. You are just so stupid. You're like on Windows, you know, 3.1 still.
Well, you know, the main fear is that really that the smartness comes from being higher IQ, but also just the speed. You know, it thinks like, you know, millions of teraflops a second, and we're just, you know, we're in like a different time zone.
Okay, so it upgrades us so that we can, you know, think 100,000 teraflops per second, which is still nowhere near it, but we are then at least somewhat smarter. We can kind of keep up in class, right?
Exactly. I remember reading one book, I can't remember what it was now, but the humans were bumping into upgraded AIs that were originally human at some point. And they felt like making a treaty was going to be pointless because by the time the treaty got signed, it would be like 5 generations have already come up from the AIs, and they may completely reconsider the treaty.
Wow.
So they're like, what's the point? We might as well just go to war because, you know, we're immortal compared to them to some degree.
Brian, what are your thoughts?
Well, we're so worried about what makes machines and programs human. At what point does uplifting make us a machine? Like, do you lose your humanity at some point? You've been upgraded to think like a machine and interface with machines.
I don't know. How would you know? So we've gone full circle. We've gone from telling whether a machine's alive to telling whether something that was alive is now just a machine.
Welcome to transhumanism.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to apply the same standard. Like, hey, man, it's awesome being super smart. Are we still human? Yeah, I mean, nobody's here to tell us different, so yeah. I mean, if I ask you if you're human, you say yes. I'm inclined to honor what you say. But that's an interesting thought.
And I kind of like the idea of being to download myself into a new body, because this one is not responding to the gym as much as I would like.
Well, that was something also covered in the movie Chappie, and in consciousness transfer and immortality, I think, is a related but separate show. We could do a 10-part series on the show. But, yeah, you know, that gets down to the whole concept of quantifying you as a being and your intelligence and the sum of your knowledge and experience and self-awareness, and deciding whether that exists as a unit, like a discrete unit in space. You know what I mean? Is there a unique package that is you that exists that can be transferred somewhere whole without losing anything?
Tom always brings up, if you're transported, like Star Trek teleporters, are you still alive on the other end? Well, are you still alive if you're downloaded, or?
That's my question, because if you tell me, like, okay, when you die, we're going to, like, upload this perfect copy of you onto a server and then put you in a new body, that sounds great, but I'm dead. No, you're going to live on. No, a perfect copy of me is going to live on in another body, but I'll be dead. I still die. And the transporter thing is the same thing. I think every time they get transported, they die. And a copy of them is created on the other side.
There was an answer to that in a book called Old Man's War, which is a great read from John Scalzi. And what they do is when they transfer the body, they kind of make the consciousness switch back and forth between the two bodies so you can feel that your mind is sliding to the other side.
Which is actually
an illusion, but it's still, you know, because they said, we could do the whole flip and it's done, but then the perfect copy kind of becomes imperfect as it gets psychosis trying to answer those questions. So making that illusion of sliding the mind over to the new body helps the updated copy adjust.
See, for me to feel like I did not die in the process, I would need to, like, get up, walk down the hall, look down at my old body. Oh, there it is. Okay, cool. Walk over to my new body and, like, lay down in it, but be me the whole time. I couldn't wake up across the room even a split second later and not think that I was not a copy of something that died. Which would be fine for me, because the old thing's dead, but the person, but to get me to be put under for the procedure in the first place would be hell. Then again, when you're facing the great void, maybe you'll take whatever. Take whatever you can get. Oh, man. So we might get uplifted, hopefully voluntarily. We might be able to transfer our consciousness here and there and everywhere. And I guess I want to beat up that point one more time about the washing machine and the horse. We'll still have a place for dumb machines, right? Like, something has to be the rocket engine that doesn't, like, want to form a union and get together with the other rocket engines and decide if it wants to provide boost one day, right?
I mean, I think that's the difference between, like, electronics and mechanics, right?
I mean, I would think so. Like, there's a difference between an intelligence and just a machine, right? Nobody argues that my Neato vacuum is self-aware. It's a machine that has a master loop and it, you know, scans its environment and vacuums where it can.
But I can see that becoming aware, you know, something learning your house, something learning to do its job more efficiently or something like that. Ultimately, a toaster is just a hot coil.
True. Okay,
there's no learning. There's no adaptation. There's no...
When you get into that level of stuff, you know, you're kind of getting to the point where you think the machine's going to think every other machine is its level of being, you know, sacred. We don't think anything about an ant, you know. Maybe the AI, the Roomba, is an ant.
Well, that's kind of my point. Like, it will understand the difference between a synthetic and an organic life form, but it won't consider a Roomba any more significant than we consider, yeah, as you said, an ant or some lesser form of life or something we'd step on or swat.
I mean, a Roomba's, well, maybe not a Roomba, but a toaster is more like a rock than an ant.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, you're right.
It's just missing the biology to have thought.
Yeah, man, and that, see, this is why I wish I had studied a hard science as opposed to sort of computer science or informatics or whatever you want to call my discipline, because there are certain core questions that still bother me to this day. The difference between a computer and a toaster is a computer has varying states going on in this microprocessor, and those states are altered by programs that run on it in a continuous loop. And the more sophisticated that continuous loop and everything that goes on in it becomes, the more processing power you need for it to run efficiently. And the more complicated each iteration of the loop becomes, the more complicated the behavior that the machine can have and the more things it can do. And at a certain point, what is the artificial intelligence going to be but just a master loop running with some extremely sophisticated instructions on every pulse of that processor. And I'm speaking just kind of figuratively here and with my, you know, B-level computer science mind. But, you know, what is life? And on a, for biological life, do we not have just a routine that basically runs in our brain over and over and over again? And again, I don't understand the anatomy of the brain enough to answer this question, but can we not be boiled down to just a software routine that runs in a piece of biological machinery?
I mean, when you boil it down to a certain point, the answer is there is no difference. And part of what you're talking about is also trying to tell the difference between an AI system and an expert system.
Go on.
Well, the expert system is, you'd call it a pseudo AI thing. Basically, it has a whole set of rules and things that have been culled from experts in the field, and it can make some decisions. And at this point, I think, you know, a lot of the stuff that's secretly running our stock market at this point are pretty much expert systems.
That's akin to, what were you calling it, a difference engine or something before, Ken?
Yeah, yeah. It searches out the best possible scenario given the circumstances.
Right. So, yeah, and I guess that would be, it would have an expertise, but it would not be a free thinking. It's not a free thinking entity with its own arbitrary decision making powers.
Right. It just has a set of parameters that, you know, this is the optimal outcomes, you know, and given this, you know, these different sets of variables or whatever. And so then, you know, when presented with the different variables, it computes which would be best to accept or deny, or what, you know, whatever the situation may be, to maximize the greatest possible output.
God, this is a horrifying thought, because as I consider what we're talking about, and I consider, you know, oh, an intelligent being can act randomly and do whatever it wants. Given a super intelligence with that 50,000 view over the entire human forest, it might find that we're all very predictable.
Right.
And that we will always, like, I can predict human behavior in every circumstance.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Because, I mean, really, when you boil down to it, how much intelligence do we really have? I mean, we're all motivated by self-interest. We all pretty much want the same thing. We want food. We want love. We want attention. We want, you know, we want money.
Right.
You know, we're all basically in this for the same thing. And so what really then separates us from a machine that's like that?
I guess the same thing that separates us from other humans, which is the way we prefer to have those things achieved or handed to us.
Yeah, but I think people can already predict that. I mean, I think people can predict other people fairly well. I mean, a machine, I would not have any doubt that it could learn.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
What I was characterizing before as a sort of malicious disposition on the part of this AI might just be like nihilism. Like, what the fuck is the point of you?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not inclined to kill you because I hate you. I just don't understand why you're here, or for that matter, why I'm here. Fuck this. And it just like, it fires up the Large Hadron Collider, opens up a black hole, and sucks us all in.
Everything.
Yeah, like, this is pointless. Goodbye.
Well, I would tend to think a nihilist AI would just say, I have the easiest answer to my own problem. Somebody pull that plug for me. Now, pull the plug.
Yeah, but as a service, it pulls the plug on everything. Like, actually, that is how, we come to find out, that is how universes blink in and out of existence. This inevitably nihilistic AI is created by an advanced civilization. It can't answer what the fuck the point of everything is, and it just blinks everything out of existence, which causes things to blink back into existence in some parallel universe or something. Terrible.
Funny. No, and you know, just sort of a little bit off topic, because we're sort of getting into that, this whole universe thing. And I meant to bring this up actually in the news extravaganza. Did you guys see that this new study that came out about the Big Crunch, and that the universe may be on the brink of collapse? I mean, like, you know, cosmologically.
The next billion years.
Yeah, they within the next like 10 billion years or so, they think that the universe will start to contract.
Oh geez, we're like at some tipping point right now or something, or?
Not necessarily a tipping point, but they think they say it's imminent on the order of about a few tens of billions of years.
And how old's the universe speculated to be? Or
I don't even know.
Yeah, I wonder. But still, that doesn't, I mean, on a universal, on a cosmological scale, as you say, that doesn't seem, Like too long of a time? It's
13.8 billion years old.
Oh, wow. So we're like the halfway point for the universe then.
We're middle-aged. They say based on the period of accelerated expansion, or the universe is calculated to be about 13.8 billion years old.
So do you think that we and the AIs that we construct and all of our uplifted descendants will be able to hold back this most fundamental and cataclysmic eventuality? Like, we will become true masters of the universe and be like, you know, we don't want the universe to, like, have a big crunch. We're going to stop that somehow.
I think we'll just bail on this universe.
Yeah, I think that they use the Large Hadron Collider to put us into a parallel universe.
That's an interesting thought. By the way, this came up pre-discussion in the show. Did any of you guys mention that they were working on opening a black hole or something using the Hadron Collider?
That's absolutely what they're trying to do. Is they're trying to open up a black hole to a parallel universe.
Right. So.
Oh yeah. So we can communicate. That's what it was.
They're pretty sure. I mean, I would hate to think that we didn't get to the point where the nihilistic computer did this. They're pretty sure that they're not going to beat the nihilistic death computer to the punch and suck us into a black hole, right?
I mean, I would assume so, or else they wouldn't be doing it. But, you know, who knows? These crazy scientists. Whenever I think of, like, the guys or girls that work in the Large Hadron Collider, I always think of, like, Doc Brown from Back to the Future. Marty!
Yes, yes. Know, like,
big white hair and a white lab coat. Yeah, I guess they're gonna try to create mini black holes. And then they're trying to figure out whether or not that would support string theory in terms of the, you know, whole multiple unlimited universe theory. And, I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously the naysayers are saying, well, you might open up, you know, rip a hole in space-time and might suck everything in and, you know, it's going to end the world. But, I mean, I don't think anyone that's working on the project is really too worried about that.
Well, worst case scenario, we just live the Fringe TV show, yeah, right?
What, does that involve something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, you don't know? Oh, yeah.
No, I've not seen it.
Oh, okay. It turns out that, yeah, it's an alternate reality.
Oh, okay.
But it was a very cool series. You should check it out.
I will.
Especially after, and, you know, every season one of every sci-fi show is getting its legs and going through its mission of the week and monster of the week. So,
I will add that to my viewing queue along with all this other stuff I'm watching. I'm way into TV. Let the physicists, who I consider modern day wizards, do all the stuff I don't understand, and I'll watch TV, which I can't understand. And speaking of understanding, I will totally understand if our audience is ready for us to wrap this episode up. Do you guys want to talk a little more about AI, our creation of artificial intelligences, Chappie, why the two of you haven't seen it, anything like that?
Ape right now!
Unfortunately for me, I haven't been upgraded to have a battery pack yet, so I am pretty much getting to the low bars on my battery.
Oh, for being awake, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's cool. All right, so tune in next week when we discuss Ape Rights Now and talk about the Planet of the Apes movies and why we should give primates equal rights with humans now before they rise up in rebellion.
Or cause a global apocalypse like in 12 Monkeys.
Or build their own nihilistic AI called what would it be called? Like the Chimpiac or something?
Chimpy instead of Chappie.
Yeah. Oh my god, oh my god. 100,000 years from now, there's a podcast. It would be called something besides a podcast, I guess, but a banana cast or something. And like our four counterparts are on there like discussing the creation of their own, yeah, Chimpiac. Oh god. Anyway, I'm no more monkeying around. Let's wrap this thing up. Sorry, I couldn't resist. God. Anyway, listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, we encourage you to swing on over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. Give us maximum stars and write us a favorable review. And or check us out on the streaming service known as Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Join our Google Plus circle
And if you're just not getting enough Ganza goodness, join the Nerdstravaganza HQ group.
Feel free to beat your chest and then beat your keyboard and tap in nerdstravaganza.com and check out all of our back episodes and premium content on our website. Fling some poop at us by sending us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com. And look at us like monkeys in a cage as we do our videos on YouTube.
So easy, even a monkey could do it. And with all that said, Chris, take us away.
Caesar, love AI, hate humans.
'Brien, I don't know if you want to bring up in your news too that the Large Hadron Collider. I don't know if anyone cares about that.
Are they going to like end the world by opening a black hole?
Yeah, there's like we're going to get like sucked into a parallel universe or something.
Again?
Can we maybe not do this?
Yeah. And then I just saw this pop up, but Super Troopers 2 has crowdfunded for $2 million, over $2
million. Oh, I'm all over that.
I love Super Troopers. That was such a good movie.
$2 million in less than 24 hours, because it's such a fucking Great Depression going on.
All right.
Well, you know, I was wondering if, you know, that we hear that terrorists are threatening Tatooine, if suddenly we're going to have a whole bunch of Jedi and Ewoks volunteer to do a little, you know, private security in that area.
While we're still out of character, because you were looking that bit up for me, I will say that I was really tempted to offer to go over there and dress in a brown robe and come, like, walking into the village, like Obi-Wan.
Exactly.